Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience in the South and our online audience joining us around the world. We're glad you all could be with us as well. Well, we've talked about two major things this year, especially in the age of COVID, that have definitely kind of come together, those being education and technology. Our next guest has written a book that kind of combines the two of these in an interesting way. We're excited to welcome Justin Reich to our program. He's the host of his own program called Teach Lab, but also the author of a new book that's already a bestseller on Amazon called Failure to Disrupt, Why Technology Alone Can't Transform Education. We'll talk to Justin not only about the work he's been able to do, but also what led him to write this book, the interesting conversation he's able to have with us about education and technology, and why it's so important for us to realize how, even though technology definitely has its pluses, there's some things it simply cannot do. If you guys are just now hearing about the book, of course we'll let you know how to get your own copy of it. But Justin, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Cyrus.
So a lot of great things for us to talk about here, Justin. You know, and you kind of come from this at an interesting angle because you've seen, of course, the importance of education. You've seen, of course, the advancements of technology. I think we all would have to say that technology has helped us in many ways, especially in the age of COVID. But you address in the book, I think, in some great ways how education is one of those things that technology cannot, you know, be able to completely take over. What has it been like for you to see the response so far to the book, Justin?
Well, it's been very exciting. Over the last two decades, education technology evangelists have made some really remarkable, strong claims about how new technologies would transform the field of education. You know, there's a Harvard Business School professor, Clay Christensen, who in 2009 argued that by 2019, half of all secondary school classes, 6th through 12th grade, would be taught online, and they would cost a third as much, and they would be better than the ones we have now. Sal Khan, who many people know from Khan Academy, claimed that we'd be able to use video to personalize and reinvent instruction, that we would have individual students sitting in front of computer terminals. They would learn math by themselves through these sort of algorithmically optimized means, and then teachers would kind of occasionally gather students together for projects and enrichment and things like that. And then this terrible pandemic came earlier this year and blighted society, and 1.6 billion learners went home. And I think most people discovered that education technologies are not transformative. They have not completely reconfigured how teaching and learning can happen. So I think a lot of folks have found the book useful to try to understand why, despite these really strong claims, we haven't actually seen a transformation of education systems because of technology.
Well, I think that says a lot also, Justin, about when you wrote the book. I mean, we're able to see in the very beginning in your prologue, as you said, you were sure that when the book came out, of course, we would still be dealing with COVID-19. Sure enough, that is true. And I totally agree with you. I think it's so interesting that we're able to, and I was reading the book, I was thinking that even though, again, I mean, technology has helped us a lot, especially for those of us who have been able to work from home, you know, doing less travel, mm-hmm. we've seen the benefits of technology. But when it comes to education, it definitely is different. Let's talk about one aspect that I think is almost a no-brainer for all of us, and that is the human connection. Justin, what was it like for you to kind of be able to see that that is one of those things that for many people, you know, that's something that definitely technology cannot take place. You know, even though we can see each other on the screen, there's nothing like having that person-to-person engagement in person.
You know, teachers very often, classroom teachers, they use a technique called presence. That's the name that they use for it, which is when a student is getting off track, when a student is starting to be disruptive, you know, not when you've got a full-blown crisis, just when things are like starting to head in the wrong direction a little bit. Sometimes what teachers will do is simply move next to that student and stand near them. And simply that presence of being next to someone can help redirect them, can help focus them, can help make better choices about their decisions and behaviors. there is a way in which things like video conferencing for sure connect us. You know, we can sort of see each other and talk to each other, but there is no equivalent in a Zoom classroom to that move of standing right next to someone. And I think what we're discovering, as a local elementary school principal said in my hometown of Arlington, Massachusetts, there's 500 or 1,000 things that we do every day, verbal and nonverbal, to make school work, and very few of them work over video conferencing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, even outside of the educators, right, Stephen, you talk about our peers, you know, the other students, how that also is something that is so important when it comes to learning for some. I know I'm a self-professed loner, but I know COVID was very difficult for my nephew, who seems to engage better, learn better, and can actually focus better when he is among his peers and in a classroom. Talk to us about that. I mean, what was that like for you to look at that, even just being able to have someone like ourselves around, how that kind of plays a role, again, something that technology can't take the place of?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, the vision that I have in my mind is, you know, put yourself in the back of a third grade classroom and watch a student put their head up, just sort of lift their head up from a worksheet, from whatever they're doing. And when that student looks around, she's going to see a bunch of other third graders doing whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing, working on the worksheet, talking to their colleagues in the right way, whatever. If she scans her head around the room, she'll see very likely a caring teacher who gives her that look, that sort of quizzical look like, okay, your head is up, but I'm not sure it is supposed to be up. Do you need something, or should you just get back to work? You know, no words exchanged, just you know how teachers know how to make those kinds of looks. When a third grader is at home during remote learning and picks her head up from her iPad or her Chromebook or whatever she's using, there's like a refrigerator full of snacks in the corner, and there's a Nintendo Switch on the other side, and you know, her sister's in the next room. There are not all of the cues and signals and sort of peer norms that let us go, oh, this is actually a moment to keep working. So I think there are a whole bunch of practices that happen in schools that we have, you know, underappreciated the value of these kinds of things. When we are near others who are learning, it helps give us the structure to learn. Even if we're loners, even if we're not talking to folks, just it's like why people go to the library to get work done. So you can sit around a bunch of other people who are sitting quietly getting work done.
Right. Exactly. And I think, too, I mean, this is such an important conversation, not only in the age of COVID, but I think just for us understanding the importance and appreciating, really, those who are, you know, part of the education system. I want to say for those who are just tuning in on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Justin Wright to our program today. Justin's celebrating his brand new book, Failure to Disrupt. We're going to remind you how you can get your own copy of it. So, Justin, let's go back a little bit because we didn't talk about this. What made you say that this was a topic you wanted to tackle in a book like this?
Sure. Well, I'm a former high school history teacher, and starting in 2003, I was put into a pilot classroom, which was a one-to-one laptop classroom, where all of my students had their own blue and orange clamshell MacBooks, and we had wireless internet in the room, and we had this software called First Class. It was an intranet, which did everything that Google Suite for Education does in schools today, and I loved it. I found all kinds of powerful ways of using these technologies to help transfer learning off my shoulders onto the shoulders of my students. But I was also at the time teaching at an affluent private school and realized that not all of the benefits of these technologies and these approaches to instruction would be realized for all learners in all circumstances. So fast forward, I ran a consultancy which helped schools integrate technology into classrooms. When edX got started, which was a partnership between Harvard and MIT to create a platform for large-scale online courses, they hired me as their first full-time researcher. And in the midst of giving some talks about early findings from HarvardX, there was a book agent who approached me and said, you should write a book about this. And I said, well, okay, if you think it's interesting, I guess I'll do it. And, you know, that was 5 years ago. I think what changed during that time is that when I started working on the book, we were kind of still in the midst of this education technology hype cycle where it was kind of like, is this going to make a difference? It doesn't seem to me like it will, but maybe we should let this play out a little longer and find out. because it took me a long time to write the book, I think it was a lot easier, you know, on the cusp of the pandemic to be able to say, you know, there's some powerful things that technology can do in classrooms, but it's a mistake to describe technology as disruptive, as transformative, because it's not technology that changes and improves schools. It's people and people working on systems that changes and improves schools.
Yeah. What a great point. And that ties into how you kind of wrap up the book. And I love this. I'm actually going to read it directly from the book, Justin. You wrote, "Much of what we want students to learn, however, cannot be demonstrated through performances that adhere to these kind of rigid structures. Indeed, in a world where humans are ever more rapidly transitioning routine tasks to robots and AI bots, the premium on creative problem-solving and complex communication is growing. Our large-scale learning systems may be growing most rapidly in domains that will be least useful in the future unless we can develop new ways to expand the subjects, disciplines, and skills that can be accessed meaningfully at scale." I love that because as you're talking there, it's very obvious that even with advancement, there's just something about a human being. It's something about that connection that is so important, especially when it comes to learning. I think one of the other things in this book, and I hadn't really talked about it in this conversation with you, Justin, but I think it's almost an outlier of the whole thing, is that if we want kids to really learn, that we have to really realize that not all learning is going to take place through a computer, right?
Yeah, absolutely, or at least not for all students. You know, one of the more recent observations from online learning research is that there are groups of students typically are most successful, most well-served, in often cases, most educated, more affluent students who do very well in online learning. You know, one way to say it is like students who would do well anywhere will do well online. But there are lots and lots of students for whom that characterization doesn't apply. And, you know, as we're seeing during the pandemic, you know, there are teachers who are making heroic efforts to transform their classroom experiences online. And, you know, through these heroic efforts, we're seeing some important successes. But for a lot of students, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your parents, students who are listening to this, know that this is hard. You know, some of the most important things that we teach in schools, how to speak to one another, how to reason from evidence, how to engage in a civil conversation, those things are just hard to learn to do, either asynchronously or through these little boxes that we see in video conferencing software.
Right. So what is your hope then, Justin, when people finish the book, whether we're talking about educators or parents, or those that are just concerned about the role of technology and what technology is doing and is not doing when it comes to education? What is your hope that when people finish the book, they'll be able to take away from it?
So I borrow two terms from an anthropologist named Morgan Ames, who did a great study of the One Laptop Per Child program, this MIT Media Lab program to create a cheap laptop that could be bought at like nationwide scale. And she describes these two stances towards technology, which she calls the charismatic stance and the tinkerer stance. And the charismatic stance is that technologies are incredibly powerful. They can transform teaching and learning. If you want to predict the future, imagine how technologies will sort of sweep away the past and lead to new presence in the way that technology has in journalism, in retail, in government, in lots of sectors. The tinkerer's stance says, all the evidence we have, not just from the recent history of computing technologies, but going back as far as radio and film strips and television, is that that's not what happens in schools. When schools get better, it's not because we do one big sweeping thing. It's because we do 1,000 little things right, that we make lots of continuous improvements. And some of those have to do with technology, finding the right technology for the right subject, for the right students. But an awful lot of them have to do with improving people, with improving communities of educators, with improving the connections between educators and families and students. And that is long and slow, deliberate, shoulder-to-the-wheel work. But I want us to celebrate that kind of tinkering. I want us to have fewer heroic stories about individual entrepreneurs who build new technologies that transform education systems, because those stories don't come true. And I want more stories that are harder to tell about communities of educators and families working together over long periods of time to say, you know, for the next 2 years, let's really try to get our math instruction in the middle grades to be somewhat better. And let's think carefully about what kinds of technologies or what kind of non-technology strategies could help us do that better. When people take away from the book, I hope they say, you know, improving schools is hard, hard work. It's immensely hard during the pandemic, but it's worth doing, it's worth investing in, and it's worth persisting at.
Right. I think that is so true, especially, again, if we're thinking about the students, not just the bottom line. I think there's so many great things that are there that they'll get from that as well, Justin. Again, everyone, Justin Reich has been our guest. Failure to Disrupt is the title of Justin's book, Why Technology Alone Can't Transform Education. As I mentioned earlier, already an Amazon.com bestseller. You guys can get your copy there. It's published by Harvard University Press. And, Justin, how can our audience stay connected with you?
You can visit failuretodisrupt.com, where you can find reviews of the book. You can find past events like this that we've done. And we actually have a virtual book club that we're still doing. We're reading together one chapter a week of the book with special guests. This coming Monday, it'll be Antero Garcia talking about the EdTech Matthew effect with me. He's from Stanford University. And there's lots of recordings and other resources there. And then if people want to find out more about the work I do at MIT and the Teaching Systems Lab, you can go to tsl.mit.edu.
Okay. All right. Well, Justin, thank you again for the time. I really do appreciate it. And looking forward to having you back on the program again.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Cyrus.
Hey, more than welcome. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's make today amazing. Take care.